The next case this morning is 522-0006, Jansen et al. Versus Santel. Arguing for the appellant, Ellarine Santel, is Wes Gozia. Arguing for the appellees, William and Laverne Jansen, is Christopher Levy. Each side will have 15 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note only the clerk is permitted to record these proceedings.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Justices.
Good morning, Justices.
If you all are ready to go, Mr. Gozia, you may proceed.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. So, good morning. May it please the court. Wesley Gozia and I represent Ellarine Santel. This particular case is, in my eyes, a unique set of situations that have led us to this event. There was originally a contract purported to have been entered December 19th of 2018 between my client and the Jansens, who were the appellees in this matter. We believe that the circuit court erred when entering the order in this case. First of all, we believe that the contract in and of itself was not a fully formed agreement, primarily based on the fact that the legal description per the terms of the contract was to be provided at a later date and time. During that proceeding, after the December 19, 2018, a number of things happened, including some surveys being done, some plats being provided. Eventually, a plat was provided that did have a legal description on it. And Mrs. Santel signed it without notarizing. And then once it was determined that the notarization was necessary, she then scratched out her signatures. There's some disagreements as to why. The appellees argue that Mrs. Santel was just unhappy with the terms and the price of the contract. We believe that, in fact, she was not in agreement with the amount of land being sold. But there's some differing opinions on that. That's the basis. We believe that the contract was never fully formed because there was never a full agreement on the exact legal description of the land to be sold. The contract itself specifically was written between Ellarine Santel and the Jansens, Bill and Laverne. Mrs. Santel, it was clear throughout the course of the proceedings that this property was owned jointly between Mrs. Santel and her husband, Robert. Robert was not mentioned anywhere in the contract. It was simply a contract between Ellarine and the Jansens. We believe that...
You're saying both parties, both Mr. and Mrs. Santel, were on the deed to the property?
Correct.
Okay.
And throughout the history, the Jansens had been farming this property for a significant period of time. And they had always written their lease checks to Mr. Santel, not to Ellarine. And they always had handshake agreements on the lease. It was it had been some time. I think 2012 was the last time there was a written lease for the ground. Otherwise, they'd been kind of handshake leases between Robert and the Jansens. So everybody was aware of the ownership of the property that it was between Ellarine and Robert jointly. The contract itself never mentioned Robert, never mentioned Ellarine as power of attorney for Robert, and never mentioned the guardian of Robert. Just Robert was never mentioned whatsoever in the contract. Judge Stedlin, when he entered the order, made an interesting point. He did mention that Ellarine Santel was always able to sell her interest in the property. So we believe that in the event that you guys, this honorable panel does find that a valid contract existed, we believe that the contract itself would have just been solely between Ellerine for her half interest in this real estate and the Jansons, which would affect some of the way the order was entered, the damages that were awarded, because the Jansons wouldn't have been entitled to the full amount of the proceeds off of farming if they were only indeed earning a one half interest in the ground that Ellerine Santel was selling. There were some disagreements throughout the course, and my client made references that she believed she was selling the real estate for $8,000 an acre, and that there wasn't really a discussion for a sale for $400,000. But and she also indicated that she believed that she was selling around 50 tillable acres. Now that would be to the point where 50 tillable acres at $8,000. Excuse me. Sorry. The land itself. She did believe that she was selling just a half interest in the ground, and there was some confusion about the amount that was being sold. We believe that if the contract itself was valid, the sale would just be for Ellerine's half interest. Mr. Santel was alive for at least a year and a half after this litigation began. Mr. Santel was not a party to this litigation. It was just Ellerine Santel. So there was a significant period of time to try to include Robert Santel's interest before Robert Santel passed. The appellees bring up the after-acquired title doctrine, saying that Ellerine eventually, by the end of this circuit court litigation, Mr. Santel had died, and therefore Ellerine owned all the property and had the ability to transfer the entirety of the property pursuant to the contract. However, at the time the contract was entered, Ellerine was the only person mentioned on the contract. So we believe that even if the contract is found to be valid, requiring Ellerine to transfer the full interest in the property that she had, that she only had a half interest in on December 18th, 2018. And at the time the litigation started and for approximately a year and a half after that, would not be the correct way to deal with that situation. We believe that the contract, if found valid, she should only have to transfer one half interest for the $400,000 contract price. Also the after acquired property doctrine does use the terms fee simple absolute. At no point in time did the contract that was entered December 19th of 2018 make any reference to fee simple absolute. The contract was probably one of the most simple real estate contracts I've ever seen, limited to one page. Basically said Ellerine Santel was selling property, listed two addresses and a legal description to follow, $400,000 to Bill and Laverne Jansen. So we believe that there was nothing to indicate that she was trying, even purporting to sell a fee simple absolute interest in the entirety of the real estate that was listed. We believe that the contract, if just looking within the four corners of the contract, was simply indicating that Ellerine was trying to sell just the interest she owned on December 19th, 2018, which would be a 1/2 interest. So otherwise, I stand on the arguments in my brief, but we'll certainly love to entertain any questions you may have.
Justice Vaughn, Justice Welch, any questions?
No questions.
Was this an 80-acre tract or a 50-acre tract? I'm sorry.
It was in its entirety, it was around 72 acres. There's some disagreement on the exact amount of tillable acreage, but my client believed it was around 50 acres tillable. I believe the appellees thought there was closer to 55, 60 acres tillable.
And what was the reason for the plat? Because they were selling as two tracts, one with the residence and then the other the land?
They were parceling out the residence because the contract itself did say that Ellerine was keeping her residence. So they were they created a plat to try to come up with a legal description, parceling off the house and separating the remaining land, which was a combination of tillable pasture and timber.
Thank you.
What was the intention to sell the 72 acres minus an acre with the house on it, or was it to sell 50 acres of tillable land only?
Well, my client's position was she was selling the tillable land, and that's where she was coming up with the per acre price was for the tillable land that she was selling. I believe that the terms of the contract, the December 19th, 2018 document itself are not particularly clear on that issue because it just listed two addresses and then separated off the house and the exact legal description to follow, which was later delineated on the plat that came down the road.
Is it true that there was nothing in the contract saying tillable land? It just said land. It didn't say tillable, did it? That's a new term that you brought out here. Or was that in the contract written tillable?
No, there was nothing written in the contract about tillable timber, anything of that nature. It just listed
it said land. It just said land, right?
Correct. So,
okay. Any further questions from the panel?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gozia. You'll have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Levy.
Thank you.
Morning, Justices. May it please the court. What's important to know about these facts is the timeline in which this happened. Okay. We have a situation where the appellee invited my clients to her home to discuss selling the property with her adult children all present. They all eventually agreed to sign a one-page document. Opposing counsel is correct, by far from a great contract, but it is a valid contract nonetheless. The contract specifies that my clients were to buy everything excluding Ellerine's house. Okay. The reason the contract says legal description to come later is because they had to have it surveyed to figure out how many acres comprised her what she was retaining, and they did so. That's what created the plat. In order to divide the property this way, they had to subdivide it, and the plat says Robert Santel's first subdivision or something of that nature, because they were parceling off 2.1 acres of property that she was going to keep. My clients were buying the remainder, including it includes tillable acreage, it includes some swamp land, it includes a little pasture acreage for cattle. And that's what was exactly reflected in the plat. At the time Ellerine signed the contract, the initial contract in December of 2018, the reason her husband's name wasn't listed there is because he was in a hospital diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And we heard testimony from the defendant and her son that they did never contemplate having him present, because I think the quote was, he doesn't know what day it is or something to that effect during their test. Okay. My clients had written lease checks when they were leasing this farm to Ellerine Santo when Robert had to be made a resident of a nursing home. She admitted she never even contemplated having it. Nobody ever looked at this one-page contract and said, wait a minute, where's my husband's name on here? You know, where's my father's name? After that, when Ellerine, after the contract was signed, she allowed my clients to go onto the land, clean out brush, remove a fence. She let them have the property surveyed. She cashed a $10,000 down payment check. She asked for another down payment check because she was frustrated the sales process was taking so long.
Well, let me ask you one question.
Yes.
If it said 8,000 acre, did that mean what was left? So how did they figure the 71 acres it ended up?
No, it actually overall was 76 acres minus 2.1.
76 acres. Okay, so they didn't agree to, or did they agree to pay $8,000 an acre for the whole?
No, they didn't. And this is where the timeline, I'm sorry.
What was the agreement price for the swamp timber and land and the rest of the land that wasn't cultivated? It wasn't tilled.
That was not separated off. They were buying everything.
They didn't figure anything in that contract. So I
apologize, Your Honor.
So there, the amount of some 8,000 an acre was only for the tillable, and then what was for the other?
Your Honor, there was never an $8,000 an acre agreement. My clients repeatedly argued against that because what that amounts to is well over what this property was appraised for. That amounts to $600,000+ when the property appraised for $438,000. Then you have to subtract the value of the 2.1 acres she's keeping for her house. The agreement here was for $400 for everything but that 2.1 acres. And actually, if I can jump back to the timeline really quick here, the first time my clients were told she was not going to honor the contract is after she signed the plat, after she reviewed the plat, saw it was 2.1 acres, after she signed her husband's name to the plat.
Now, did she have a written power of attorney from her husband?
Not until a month later.
But he had Alzheimer's.
Exactly. So now, I won't get into...
Did he have the power to sign that power of attorney?
That is a great question, and I don't know. But the bottom line is she got his power of attorney basically as a means of trying to prove that she didn't have it previously when she signed his name as a way of trying to void the contract. And then
but actually she didn't have his power of attorney when she signed it.
Or she had been, she did not, but she has had his, she has signed his name on checks and other government documents.
Well,
and
does that give you the power to do anything? Just signing it. So why have power of attorney? If you sign a couple checks, why have power of attorney? Does the power of attorney mean anything?
They were trying to use that as a means of voiding the contract because at this point they had already gotten advice from.
So you're assuming then that because she signed some checks, she had a power of attorney unwritten. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what my clients believe. And again, my clients were there signing this contract and the defendants here never said anything about having Robert Santel present because everybody knew he was in a nursing home with Alzheimer's. So
he sold something he didn't even know. He sold his half and didn't even know.
Sure, because she represented that she could sign his name.
And that set give her the power to do that?
I think
the reason is why have a power of attorney. That's the question.
I think it was because she was trying to show that she previously didn't have. She testified she never had a power of attorney, even though she had represented numerous times to my clients that she did. So they didn't have any reason to second guess this, since he wasn't there and they knew he was had Alzheimer's in the nursing home, and she had signed his name on other documents before. But the interesting thing here as well is the first reason they tried to void this contract is because she says, I did not have his power of attorney and no authority to sign his name. Then this $8,000 an acre argument didn't show up until April of 2020, which is well after this litigation started. That was not mentioned anywhere in any pleadings. It didn't come out until testimony. Okay. And then the argument that she thought she was only selling 50 acres is just her doing backwards math, you know, 400,000 divided by, 400,000, you know, backwards at $8,000 an acre is 50 acres. That argument didn't come out until right before we had a motion for offensive summary judgment argued. And actually that argument didn't come out until they provided an affidavit 5 minutes into that argument stating that she said, I believed I was only selling 50 acres. And that was a year after, 2 years after she got the power of attorney in April of 21. So there are these revolving arguments about why this contract is invalid. And it all started with the signature issue. Then they started arguing the contract was vague as to price and to acreage. And it's not, because we've got the price on the contract and then we've got the acreage on the plat. And she voluntarily signed both of them. And she testified that for months she was happy with the contract. Now then at trial, her son testifies it was the day they signed the contract in December of 2018 that they realized there was something wrong with it. So why would they continue if they were unaware or that there was something wrong with the price? They had many months to make an issue out of it instead of waiting and signing further documentation and signing her husband's name in agreement with the contract. She testifies she was happy with it, you know, but it was not until later in at the end of March at some point when it was a family member of hers who, by the way, is a land appraiser or was a land appraiser, told her she could have gotten more. Then she agreed to sell this contract, or she agreed to sell the property. That's when she decided to try and void the contract.
And let me back up for a second. You said that she held out to them that she had power of attorney, but on the contract for sale of land, she did not sign Robert's name. She didn't sign Ellerine Centel and Robert Centel by Ellerine. It was just between Ellerine and your clients, the Jansons. So there was no even representation that she had power of attorney or should not have put them on notice that they're missing a necessary party to this contract?
Not when they suspected he didn't have the capabilities of signing a contract to his Alzheimer's.
He's still an owner. Somebody has to represent him as the owner, either by power of attorney or by guardianship.
Sure, and there was never a guardianship appointed. Okay, there was never a guardianship opened for him. Okay. They testified that the defendants testified that they didn't think he had any reason to be there because of his dementia. There was never a guardianship appointed. You know, unfortunately, these two parties entered this contract. They had been lifelong friends. My clients had farmed their property under leases for a long time. They didn't actually ever expect this to become an issue. But I think the fact that not only was Robert Centel incapacitated during this entire process, at this point, she had been representing that she could represent his interests. And because she owned it as a joint tenant with a right of survivorship, now that he's passed away, she's got sole title to the property. So that's where the doctrine of after-acquired title would come in if it doesn't come in at the time she got his power of attorney, a month after she signed his name on these documents.
Could I ask you one question I have is, who was the drafter of the document?
Contract?
Yes.
Well, it was something the parties printed off the internet and filled out together.
Well, you say the parties, so she was involved in that, printing that up, or did the buyer, alleged buyer, come over and print that, have that?
My clients printed it off the internet, but then they all sat down and filled it out together with her adult children. It's a one-page, very simple document.
But the drafter of the document was the buyer. Is that correct?
No, it was a blank document that had to be filled out with the details, and both parties sat and did that.
So tillable land was put down as one of the details?
No, it is not.
Just the whole part.
It's got two addresses on it, and it says excludes Ellerine's house. And it was for the mass, the addresses that are included there are all of the acreage the defendants own. So that's why it was filled out that way. It's very clear what was being sold here, because they were having to, they had to have it obviously subdivided, but they didn't know, neither party knew what the acreage was until they saw the plat. And both parties voluntarily signed it. Mrs. Santel obviously voluntarily signed it. She testified she reviewed it first. She testified her adult son was there reviewing the plat with her, and she signed both names to it, hers and her husband's, and returned it unnotarized. But the acceptance of the contract comes in when she signed those names to that plat, because that is the legal description that was to follow.
Some issue has been made about the failure to have Ellerine's signature notarized on the plat. I'm not aware of any requirement that a real estate sales contract has to be notarized. The deed has to be notarized, but is there any provision that a real estate sales contract has to be notarized? And I know the Platt Act required some notarization, but is that necessary to make a binding real estate contract?
No, it's not, because it doesn't have to be notarized to be acceptance of the contract. And that notarization provision in the Platt Act only applies to school district issues for the recording of the plat to show that the seller knows what school district will apply to the property they are selling. It's not required for acceptance of a contract.
It's more a recording issue instead of a contract issue.
Yes. But, to just quickly summarize here, they've had a revolving door of arguments trying to invalidate this, because as you can tell, or as you probably could guess, there's a lot of animosity between these parties at this point. Even when my clients would be out there farming under a valid lease, which they had to go to court to actually enjoy, they're being video recorded and things like that by the defendant. So they don't like each other at this point.
Let me ask you this, that if the trial court's finding this as a valid contract is affirmed, you've also asked for damages for loss of farming income. Is that issue really even ripe at this point? Is that something that could not be raised later? Or is that something to remand back? Even if we affirm, should we remand back for damages on
lack of farming? We'd like to get further damages, because the longer this litigation has gone on, the more years my clients can't farm and profit from the property.
But we don't have any evidence before the appellate court. How would we make that determination? Is that something that would come later, or is that something we should remand for the trial court to determine?
I think we could remand it to the trial court to determine that, because he's already granted 2 years worth of lost profits based on insurance documentation and several other exhibits that were entered in the trial court.
Thank you.
Mr. Levy, I see our time is up. Your time is up, I should say. Excuse me. Does the panel have any other questions for Mr. Levy?
No other questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your argument. Mr. Gozia, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Going back to the the initial drafting of the contract, the Jansons that were the ones who printed this contract out online, they brought the contract over to Mrs. Santel's residence, and the Jansons filled it out in the presence of Ellerine. The only thing that the Ellerine...
Was it Ellerine and her adult children present during that?
Ellerine's adult children were present at the house, not in the room where the contract was signed. It's not a very large house, but there's a kitchen separated where Ellerine was at the table with the Jansons, and her children were in the living room that's next to the kitchen, but a separate room.
So they were all part of the discussion as far as what the testimony is.
There's some disagreement as to how much discussion Ellerine's children were involved in, but they were all present at the house.
Okay.
Does her cashing of the deposit, the $10,000 deposit, does that not put her in an awkward position to try and claim we didn't have a contract?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. However, at that point in time, they really had no specific agreement on a legal description, and they were waiting a plat for that. So we don't believe that her cashing the check completely invalidates that, because I think everybody would agree at that particular point in time, there was no full agreement on the exact amount of land until the plat was prepared. And then there's a lot of reference to this this appraisal that the Jansons had done. I would point out that it was I think appraisal is not an appropriate term for the document. It was an estimate from the bank as to what they would finance. There's no appraiser license number or anything of that mentioned on this this document. I think it's more of an estimate of value by the bank and not so much a formalized appraisal. But the Jansons were the ones who brought the contract over. It's clear to everybody that Robert Santel and Ellerine Santel were joint owners of the property. Whether Ellerine brought it up or the Jansons brought it up, the Jansons should have known that Robert Santel is an owner of the property. The Jansons should have known that Mr. Santel's name needed to be referenced on the contract. The Jansons, during questioning at trial, did indicate that they've never done a real estate transaction in this manner before. So there's just a lot of things involved in this that are a little different and outside the norm. But we fully believe that at a minimum that the contract itself on the December 18th or December 19th, 2018, if found valid, can only be found to be valid between Ellerine for her one half interest and the Jansons. Robert was not mentioned. There's no mention of fee simple absolute in the contract or anything that would be analogous to that term in the term of the contract. So we don't believe that the after acquired property doctrine would even apply in that situation. Ellerine owned a one half interest on December 19th, 2018. And for a significant period of time after that, until Robert died in early 2021. So there's no mention of Robert in the actual pleadings, trying to bring Robert, his estate, his power of attorney, anything of that nature involved in this. It was simply a contract between Ellerine Santel and the Jansons. So, thank you.
Thank you, Justice Welch. Justice Vaughn, any questions?
No questions.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for your arguments today. We will take this matter under consideration and issue a ruling in due course. You guys have a great rest of your day.